Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. So, you know, I love a good cult story or the possibility of a cult. And I think that if you've been around long enough, you've heard me talk about a lot of cults, and we can agree on certain things that cults do. Generally, they isolate you. They make you dependent on them. There's generally an ask. They get you to commit to the thing and don't let you leave. Agreed. I mean, that's pretty much a cult. So there was a lot of talk online the past few days, past week or so, about Miranda Derrick. And she is a TikTok star, a dancer. And she has been the subject of some blinds, but not related to a cult. And I kind of wanted to dig into this 7M Films, to see if they really are a cult. Or if it's just a crazy kind of over-the-top religion, just prosperity gospel kind of thing. I really was curious. Because I went into it thinking it's a cult. Because I was sent some stuff and looked at some stuff from a person who kind of put it all together and said, oh, it's a cult. But is it a cult? So you have this TikTok star, Melanie Wilking, who is the sister of Miranda Derrick. And they started off, you know, a long time ago on a YouTube account that they shared. And then in 2020, their TikTok exploded and they got 3 million followers. And it's just them. It was just the two of them dancing and stuff. And then Melanie alleged in an Instagram video that I have watched that her sister is being held hostage by a cult/entertainment management firm. Now, do I think that there's anything shady about this entertainment management firm? Absolutely. Do I think that they're probably ripping off all their clients? Absolutely. But are they a cult? See, that's the question. So, because you have Melanie and her parents, and they're doing this Instagram live, and Melanie is very put together, kind of, you know, full on makeup. Looks like, hey, I'm going to do a video today. I need to look my best kind of thing. And just subtle things that it almost felt like the thirst was more than the caring about the sister. And she, you know, has a Kleenex and is rubbing her eyes and possibly crying. It's hard to tell. And she is front and center in this. And you can just see mom and dad kind of on the edges, and they kind of have to put their face towards the camera if they want to actually say anything. But they're talking about 7M Films, and it's an offshoot of a Pentecostal sect that believes in something called the Seven Mountain Mandate. And they say that Miranda's being held hostage by them, as well as other artists who are part of the 7M Films. Now, there was a big article written back in 2020, an outline by a woman by the name of Elle Hardy, who actually has a book coming out, I noticed when I looked on her Twitter. And this was a last-minute kind of thing. And she's in a different time zone. She's in Europe. And I kind of wanted to ask her if she thought that Seven Mountain Mandate was a cult, or is it just, you know, an over-the-top Pentecostal religion? And judging by little blurbs that I read of her book, which I don't have in here, just basically talking about the Outline Magazine article, but she has taken this Outline Magazine article and kind of turned it into a book about how the Pentecostal religion is trying to take over the world. And the Seven Mountain Mandate is based on a reading of a Bible verse. Basically just comes from one Bible verse, Isaiah 2:2. And from which a group of self-proclaimed apostles have a plan rooted in biblical prophecy to invade every sphere of life as we know it. So according to followers of 7M, the key facets of life are education, religion, family, business, government, entertainment, and media. And it's their job to rid those institutions of demons and witchcraft. If you look, well, most of TikTok is fairly wholesome. Obviously, there's, you know, stripper talk, escort talk, bikini talk. But, I mean, for the most part, it tends to be more PG, PG-13 at the most. As long as you stay in a certain algorithm. There's some really horrific things on there, too. But you really have to go looking for them. But we're just going to focus right now on the whole entertainment and media. And if you look at the dancers that Miranda works with, they're generally very innocent looking, innocent sounds. They use a lot of old music, a lot of Bee Gees and stuff like that. It's very kind of odd, but at the same time, maybe that's the kind of music they like. But is it because 7M, because they're very religious, do not want other kind of sounds, more modern day? And the Seven Mountain Mandate came into being in 1975, when God apparently delivered a message to a missionary movement leader named Lauren Cunningham, and also to Bill Bright and Francis Schaeffer, to basically invade the seven spheres. Didn't really go anywhere. No, 25 years didn't do anything. And then Lauren Cunningham met with a guy named Lance Wallnau and told him of the vision of 25 years earlier. So Wallnau, who is online everywhere, a consultant based in Dallas, and he's got a doctorate in ministry with a specialization in marketplace. Don't those two things, ministry and marketplace? And it's from the Phoenix University of Theology. But he saw the idea's potential and started promoting seminars and training courses. And I looked at a different article that had been written, I guess, by the Daily Beast back in 2017 or 2016. And basically, this 7M has really kind of jumped in the amount of revenues. Most of the revenues, they started averaging about $1 million a year, $2 million a year. And this Wallnau's got 20 different things that he's trying to sell. It's just all a bunch of different parts of revenue. And of course, if you have somebody who's super popular on TikTok and you have multiple people, you can make a lot of money. And Wallnau kind of co-authored the movement's call to arms called Invading Babylon, the Seven Mountain Mandate, with a guy named a pastor by the name of Bill Johnson from a California church, Bethel Church. And Pentecostalism is the fastest growing religion around the world. And that's basically what L's book is about, from what I've been able to piece together, is that it's taking over the world. And what they'd like is to be put in the same breath as Catholicism and Protestants, that kind of thing, the Greek Orthodoxy, those kind of things, to just be one of those religions. And out of 2 billion Christians, about a quarter are now Pentecostal. And that's a figure that's grown from 6% in 1980. So you can see that it is the fastest growing religion by far. And one thing that I did not know until I read Elle's magazine article is that Pentecostalism actually came to life in Los Angeles. William J. Seymour, Azusa Street Revival, and in 1906. And I had no idea. I have been to Pentecostal churches, and I've seen them. But I would have guessed, if you had asked me, I said, oh, it probably came from somewhere in the South. But no, it actually originated in Los Angeles with a street preacher. And it's named for the miracle of Pentecost. And basically, I guess we're now in the third wave of it. And this is a branch which focuses on the roles of apostles, and then prophets, which would be somebody like Wallnau. And they want to be, as I said earlier, this fifth pillar of Christianity, Protestant Catholicism and the two branches of Orthodoxy. It is very interesting. It's described as something between a music festival and a self-help seminar. And that kind of goes with the whole TikTok thing. You're concentrating on the music part, and then there is a lot of self-help stuff on TikTok, but that's where Wallnau would come in. But if you can pull people in and get them to click on 7M and stuff like that, then you're getting more people to join. Is it more like Hillsong? You know, which Hillsong I consider mostly a cult, but you are, you know, kind of free to leave. They're not going to track you down like Scientology or something like that. And they call themselves non-denominational, but of course, you know, they're using the Bible. And like I said, from Isaiah 2:2. And the actual quote, the actual Bible verse says, now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains. And then the number 7 is significant in the book of Revelation, where the apocalyptic prophecy is preached to the 7 churches of Asia. Now, what Wallnau and Johnson want to do is to set people free from torment and disease to destroy the works of darkness. And, you know, they use all the words and everything like that. And, you know, they have kinds of things where witchcraft, and they want, you know, Satan out and stuff like that. It's not very cult-like. It just sounds like it's a religion. It really does. And you have Melanie going on there saying that 7M is a cult. And Miranda has responded. I'm going to read her detailed Instagram post. And then her husband also did. Because there are a lot of questions. And Miranda said that Melanie, her sister, kicked her out of the 3.1 million follower TikTok account that Miranda had actually started and that she had let Melanie join. And that she stopped speaking with her family because they called the cops on her black then boyfriend, who is now her husband. Now, Melanie would argue that, hey, I have a black boyfriend too, and my parents haven't called the police on him. But apparently when Miranda moved in with her now husband, who also dances, this guy named James Derrick, and she said, I just didn't want to talk to them. It's not that I was forbidden from contacting them by 7M. She said, I can speak for James and her friends who are in 7M that they do speak to their families. So what you guys have heard about 7M dancers not speaking to their families is a complete lie. It's just a unique situation with my family. The problem is that there are no 7M dancers who have, let's say, broken away or anything. There are other people, if you go on Reddit, they go, oh, well, I know somebody who's a 7M dancer and they don't talk to their parents either. But those parents haven't come forward. It is a very interesting situation that Melanie and her parents have essentially just said, hey, they're in a cult. There's not a whole lot to back it up. And here's Miranda's official statement. She goes, first of all, I want to address that I have communicated to my parents in the past year multiple times. A year ago, I decided to move out of living with Melanie. Even after all of that, I was still willing to work with Melanie on our TikTok account and make things work on terms we both wanted. I wanted to start a new life with James, but I also wanted to continue working together with Melanie. Then I was kicked out of the 3.1 million follower TikTok account that I originally started and had Melanie join. I asked if I could have access to it so that we could continue our TikTok account together, and she refused to grant me access. After constant back and forth over this topic, I finally let Melanie have full access over that account, so it forced me to start all over. To everyone who's reached out asking if I'm okay and involved in a religious cult, thank you so much for your concern, but I'm not involved in a religious cult. And regarding the statement saying that none of us are speaking to our families, I can say that everyone in my management group speaks and communicates with their families. It is just my unique situation where I'm not speaking to my family as often as I used to because they were not supportive of the decisions I made. Okay. I mean, that happens a lot. It doesn't mean that she's in a cult. She goes on to say, there was a disagreement in my family where they didn't respect a decision that I made to move in with James and start our life together. Due to the disagreement, I haven't talked to my family as much as I used to, but I have communicated with them within the past year multiple times. Now, let me stop here for just a second before I continue with her statement, because there is a, I don't know, somebody on Instagram, Twitter, whatever, that has kind of been fomenting this, that Miranda's in a cult. And there are podcasters out there who, over the past week or 10 days that this has been blowing up, have basically taken that person's position without actually, you know, looking into it. You need to, a lot of these podcasters are just celebrity entertainment kind of things, and they haven't done the deep dives on cults that I have or that you guys have listened to or that you know about. And there are certain characteristics to a cult. And it sounds as if, at first when I was reading Miranda's statement, I go, okay, did she write this or did somebody from 7M write it? And it really sounds authentic to her. And she said, I can speak for James and her friends who are in 7M that they do speak to their families. So what you guys have heard is a complete lie. It's just a unique situation with my family where I don't speak to them as often as before, because who would want to speak with people who completely disagree with you and who don't respect you? And I think what she's referring to is, hey, I like this religion. Maybe she is a born-again Christian or whatever, and maybe her parents are not on board with that. And they have a disagreement. She says, at the end of the day, James and I are grown adults, which they are, who are excited to be married and live with one another. And when people are not on board with your decision, I guess they just believe what they believe. And we agree to disagree and things take time to heal. See, this does not sound like some kind of official statement brought out by the church. I will say that the guy who's in charge of 7M Films, he's a producer. So it's separate from the 7M. It's the same, the Monument Movement or whatever, but the person is specifically in charge of 7M Films. I looked him up and he produced a Meghan Markle movie. Anyway, so going back to Miranda's statement, and again, what makes it sound seem more authentic is she goes, when I left, they decided to call the cops on James. I believe that if it was a statement written by 7M, they would say they decided to call law enforcement. I just feel that's what a publicist would write rather than the cops. And saying that my black boyfriend James kidnapped and abused me, the police officers ended up going to where James lived and they tried calling James, but he was on set for a job and actually could not answer his phone. They then got a hold of me and wanted to meet me in person to make sure that I was not kidnapped or hurt in any way. I ended up meeting up with the police officers and they saw that I was fine and we actually laughed about the situation because they said, wow, it seems that your family was really upset that you moved out. And I just said, hey, it was a disagreement that we had and that's it. And everything was fine and the police left. Now, Miranda and her husband, they did something for the Super Bowl. They were on Ellen recently. And it was after all of this fame, after this blowing up, that all of this happened. It wasn't prior to that. And apparently Miranda didn't go to her grandfather's funeral or something. And she said, I didn't want to go to my papa's funeral because I was afraid that I would be held captive in Michigan. I didn't feel safe with my dad. And that's perfectly understandable, too. Maybe her dad is not a nice person. The little I've seen of it, he seems intense. And Miranda says, I went back for my things in my old apartment by myself. It was my mom, dad, and I at the apartment. We talked and they tried to get me to stay and not go and live with James, and I had already made my decision. My decision was final. And then it got to a point where the conversation was just going in circles, so I wanted to get out of there. I got in my car and I was ready to back up and leave, and they actually physically held me back and harassed me. My dad opened up the trunk of my car and grabbed my purse so they wouldn't have my license to drive. I'm not sure why she kept it in her trunk, but I had to forcefully grab my purse back and try to shut the trunk of my car. I then got back in the driver's seat, and my dad took his car and blocked me in my own driveway, and my mom was holding my arm, speaking out to me and reading what a cult meant and said that I was a part of one. It doesn't sound like a cult in certain respects, because it does sound as if, and again, we're only hearing from one person. Now, if some other people from 7M say, we weren't allowed to do this, we're isolated, we're forced to make videos, something like that. But so far, nobody's doing that. But it's fairly still a young organization. Now, there are things that, like I said, are troublesome. And Miranda said, I didn't want to speak about these things because honestly, it's embarrassing, but I'm forced to talk about family issues publicly by my own family. Now, here's where it's a little bit odd, because then her husband, and I'll go into detail about his statement, but he said this all started with a white, beautiful woman moving in with a poor black man from Compton that the parents did not approve of. I get it. I was renting a room and had no car. I was a divorced man with a son. Okay. So his explanation sounds good. You know, maybe the parents said, no, he's just not the right guy for you or whatever. But then to say that it's a cult is interesting. Now, here's where let's talk about, because I'm perfectly willing to debate whether or not it's a cult. I'm not close to the idea at all. But like I said, it's still a fairly young organization. And this is the part that does bother me. He said that they got married and joined a management company that helped me to become successful in a matter of months. That is true. Because they were popular, but nothing like being at the Super Bowl and Inside Edition and Ellen and all that kind of stuff. And he clarified to his followers that 7M is not a religious nonprofit organization, but a secular for-profit company run by people who have faith in God. It is a nonprofit. Now, 7M Films is still run by a guy who used to run a church. I think his name is Robert Shin. And his son, Isaiah Shin's in all these videos trying to become popular. He's not as good. He's not a natural at everything, at, like Miranda or her husband, or even Melanie. So this kind of a little bit odd, a little nepotism going on there. But it was still 7M Films was started by a guy who still runs a church. And 7M, the other part I already talked about with Walno and Johnson, is for sure a nonprofit because you can go look at all their statements. So the 7M, I looked up, it is a corporation and it is a for-profit company now run by people of faith in God. And then this is another troublesome part is that the organization manages his books and helps with taxes and finances. It is their job to manage slash control our books and schedules. That's a little troublesome. Managers are, yeah, you get a business manager, manage the book, help with taxes and finances, totally, got it. But to control our books and schedules, so you don't have access to them? Because there was a quote attributed to Shin on Reddit, you know, anybody can sign up with anything, but it said that, hey, Miranda has the most freedom out of anybody, has a car and a house. I have seen that the house is not theirs, but it's controlled by the company. But that, again, is not unusual with TikTok if you think about all the hype houses. So there are parts of this that are troublesome. Now, Miranda's husband said, this is not a cult activity. It's called doing business. Again, it's young. We got time to see whether or not that's true. Now, his official statement said, first of all, there's two sides to every story. This is the other side of the Wilkins family drama. And like I said, the part about the renting a room and his divorced man with a son. And that Dean Wilkin called the cops on me saying they were afraid for Miranda's life and that Miranda was kidnapped by me. They accused me of domestic violence and kidnapping. Melanie then decided to lock Miranda out of Wilkin's sister's TikTok account, which had millions of followers, and refused to pay Miranda's from the previous brand deals. Okay, so this, how he's putting that, it sounds like there's probably a lot of arguments. I think this is quite the understatement, where he said refused to pay Miranda's from the previous brand deals. So we got married and joined a management company. I started getting paid from endorsements that dancers like me never had before. I've been able to pay off my debts, buy a new car, and move into a nice home. Now the management company manages my bookings and helps with taxes and finances. I mean, management companies, that's what they're supposed to do. And there are a lot of dancers on TikTok, and very few making much money. So I get what he's saying. And look, I was dancing, I wasn't doing anything. The next thing you know, I start getting paid from endorsements that I never had before. So if you think about it like that, most of the time a cult takes all your money. They're not giving you money. They're not helping you earn money. Now, how much of a percentage are they taking? Because if you start, hey, you never made anything before, now you're making $100,000 a year. But how much is the management company taking? Are they just taking 15 or 20%? Or are they taking 50%? And again, I think his statement was not written by a publicist because there are a lot of misspellings. He says, FYI, talents pay agencies and management companies to control their bookings and finances. No, not really. That's not how it works. They help, but it's supposed to be a cooperation. And then he says, is it wrong for Christians to be engaged in a non-faith-based entertainment business? If 7M was run by an unbeliever, then is it no longer a cult? There's a lot of periods in here, the grammars, and it's all caps. I've been burned and ripped off by many secular management companies in the past. Now, this is something, a little bit different statement maybe than Miranda goes. It was Miranda and my decision to restrict our communication with Wilking family to give us some space. Now this personal situation has escalated to get out. Referring to the movie, I guess. From a cult organization who has not allowed members to communicate with their families. And then, by the way, how do they know who talks to who? Did they tap my phone line or something? Don't be too quick to believe everything you hear from one side. After our Super Bowl appearance, our phones was lighting up, and we were busy talking to parents, sisters, brothers, cousins, aunts and uncles, high school friends and fans. So where did this we're not allowed to talk to our families come from? And I would imagine that after the Super Bowl and them being on it, that their phones did blow up. And, you know, he closes with, we've chosen not to air our side publicly for many reasons. Miranda called Melanie and offered to meet and talk Monday if she takes down all of the social media smear campaign, and she refused. And then, look, to be honest, God forgive them. So it sounds as if they are both firmly convinced of this. I still need to see more proof that it's a cult. It sounds to me more like a company that's just taking advantage of people that are young and don't have a lot of experience with contracts and stuff and screwing them over. That's what it sounds like to me. If you had come to me and said, oh, there's this company, you know, 7M Films, and they are screwing over the people. They have all these different things. Oh, where we have taxes, we have business fees, we have management fees, we have agency fees, all this kind of stuff. But if the entertainer is used to getting nothing and all of a sudden they have stuff to, oh, I can pay off my debts, got a car, I'm living in a house. And before, remember, he says he was renting a room and had no car. And if he does have a son who apparently is being taken care of by the son's mother, and now he's making all this money, I would imagine that at some point we will have some kind of child support issue, and then we will find out exactly how much he makes, and that perhaps the books will be opened. But to me, just seeing how people in Hollywood are always trying to find an angle, you have 7M spreading this message or whatever that they want spread by people, and they're making money off of it and getting stars and faces. And I think that you were going to find down the line that perhaps Miranda and her husband will file a lawsuit against 7M Films saying, hey, you know, some deal said that they paid us $2 million and we only got $200,000 out of it. It's going to be something like that. And we see the same thing in the record industry all the time. Those first contracts are horrible. That's why if you're a hit group, you often, actually most of the time, will negotiate with another label and get out of that horrible contract that you signed with your first label. And the second label makes a deal with the first label and off you go to a more talent-friendly deal. I would imagine that their deal with this company is not talent-friendly. I would also imagine, without knowing, that the contracts from 7M Films were presented to all these TikTok people, these dancers, and said, here's the management agreement. I seriously doubt that any of them were offered the opportunity to see an attorney or talk to an attorney. That's just kind of, you know, my opinion. And if you go on Reddit, you'll see people who say, oh, you know, like I said, I know so-and-so. So here's one that I found. It said, I know the family personally, and I can assure you that Melanie and the parents are not batshit crazy. I've known the family since sixth grade and hung out with them in July of 2020. During that brief time, Miranda talked about her boyfriend was too religious. Fast forward 6 months later, and I talked to Melanie, and she says Miranda blocked her, etc. This person that I'm reading from, I think signed up for Reddit a day earlier or something, and I'm always, when people do that and then say, oh, I know the family and everything, and then they refer to Miranda, and they said, oh, I don't believe it's Miranda, released a statement saying that her dad was abusive and that she felt like he'd hold her captive. I don't recall her saying that her dad was abusive, just that she was scared of him and that she thought she would be held captive. But I just read her whole statement. She didn't say that her dad was beating her or anything. And then this person says that her dad is the best person alive and wouldn't hurt a fly. He's intense. I just, you know, it's, then they also said that Miranda got married and then joined 7M, which is false. They joined 7M, then got married. What does that really matter? You know, what is that? People, and then they say, well, you know, they do things for likes. I think part of the problem is that the person online who is trying to, like I said, put forth this cult situation was somebody, I guess, who has a reputation for just going for clicks and likes and has offered to help Melanie's family and stuff. I'm sure that they'll hear about this and come after me, but have they looked into cults? Just because something's religious doesn't mean you automatically need to hate it. Like I said, I'm not even really talking about the religious part. I'm more focused on this entertainment and the 7M Films. And I absolutely believe that they probably are getting ripped off. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if, like I said, in a year or so, that a bunch of people sue 7M Films saying, hey, we didn't get paid, we were promised, and all this kind of stuff. That wouldn't shock me at all. Now, enough about that for a second. Let's talk about Ghislaine. Because we had a hearing today. Now, Judge Nathan had, last week I talked briefly about it, and there were some motions filed because Ghislaine's lawyers wanted the hearing to be much more broad. They wanted to subpoena Juror Number 50's social media and all this kind of stuff. They wanted to find out if he'd been paid. But Nathan had cited previous cases and rulings by appeals courts to show that the inquiry into the conduct of Juror Number 50 must be limited. And they're also that they wouldn't ask other jurors. They wouldn't, no other jurors would be questioned about what Juror Number 50 said to them. And then Judge Nathan said, quote, that his direct, unambiguous statements to multiple media outlets provide substantial and incontrovertible evidence that an impropriety, a false statement during jury selection, has occurred. Then she said, basically what I've said in the past, quote, to be clear, the potential impropriety is not that someone with a history of sexual abuse may have served on the jury. Rather, it is the potential failure to respond truthfully to questions during the jury selection process that asks for that material information so that any potential bias could be explored. 100%. I've said it multiple times. I'll say it again right now. You're supposed to bring your personal experiences. It is a jury of peers. But let's also be clear that, and again, I want Ghislaine to be in jail. Don't anybody doubt that. But this is just a legal thing. Is that if you are a defense attorney and it's about sexual abuse and somebody is a sexual abuse survivor, you're not going to let that juror be on there. You're just not. And Judge Nathan, in her decision about these motions, where she said, I guess she wanted, there was an order to a public hearing where what happened today, where she was going to question the juror because he checked the no box as his answer to question 48. And the question 48 was, have you or a friend or family member ever been the victim of sexual harassment, sexual abuse, or sexual assault? This includes actual or attempted sexual assault or other unwanted sexual advance, including by a stranger, acquaintance, supervisor, teacher, or family member. And Nathan also said that today that she would question the juror about why he checked no to question 25, which asked, have you or any of your relatives or close friends ever been a victim of a crime? Because obviously he was a victim of a crime. And she had said in her ruling on Thursday that the purpose of the questions would be to determine if he's engaged in any misconduct warranting a new trial. So then we had a hearing today. And the juror told Judge Nathan that failing to disclose his child abuse history during jury selection was one of the biggest mistakes of his life, but an unintentional one. Now, remember, he's granted immunity, so he needs to be completely truthful. Because he's not going to jail, so just you have to be totally honest. And he said, I didn't lie in order to get on this jury. And Judge Nathan questioned him extensively. I think it was about 25 or 30 minutes, just one-on-one. You know, as part of an effort to decide whether the revelation about his personal history as a sex abuse survivor will spoil the verdict. And the juror number 50, repeatedly expressed regret. Judge Nathan asked him dozens of questions about why he didn't reveal the abuse on a questionnaire. And the juror kind of stuck to the answer that he's always given, which is he didn't mention it because he skimmed way too fast through the questionnaire. Quote, this is one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made in my life. Now, Maxwell was in court. And of course, Maxwell's lawyers say that the verdict should be thrown out. Because they would have objected. Whether it's intentional or not, I mean, the fact remains that he did say no. And if he had said yes, he wouldn't have been on the jury. And then he has admitted that he swayed the jury. And he told the judge today that he had been repeatedly sexually abused at age 9 and 10 by two people. And the judge gave the lawyers in the case until a week from today to submit legal briefs on whether the verdict should be set aside. Because Maxwell's sentencing is scheduled for June. And this juror, I mean, he did several media interviews and talked about, you know, that he'd been abused. But it's the whole part where he said that he persuaded the jurors during deliberations that a victim's imperfect memory of abuse doesn't mean it didn't happen. And he checked no to 48. And, you know, he had said, as I told you last week when I did a Maxwell thing, that he was going to invoke his Fifth Amendment privilege to and not answer the questions without that immunity. And he also checked no on the have you or any of your relatives been a victim of a crime. This is all very, like I said, when this first was announced, I'm convinced that he saw the question and chose to write no. I get going through everything really quickly. Got it. We're presented with something and it's just, you know, it's like if you go to the doctor's office and and they ask you 6 million things and you're just going to check no to every single one unless you've specifically had something. And I get that. And do you read every single one? No. But in this case, though, I get that he said he flew by. But I think he also knew that if he answered yes to some of these questions, just the same as if you answer yes to some question in the doctor's thing, that the doctor's going to ask you about it. And you also know, like, I've never had anything, God, knock on wood for this, anything serious where I'm checking a yes on that doctor thing, right? I'm not. But if I knew that I had, I don't know, a congenital heart defect or something, whatever is one of those things, I would look for it and say yes to that. It is a sex abuse trial. He's reading some of these questions, even if he skipped through it. He's going to know that they're going to ask him if he's been a victim of it. It's very tough. I think that if he had just not checked the box and not given the media interview, first of all, I mean, he brought this on himself. If he hadn't given a media interview, nobody would even know. But he did. And it was bad enough that he checked the no, but then when he started talking about influence the jurors and everything, it was just, oh. I want Ghislaine to go to jail for the rest of her life. But I think that everybody is entitled to a fair trial. And I just don't know what the judge is going to do. And the other thing that I've talked about is that Judge Nathan's about to get a promotion to the appeals court. So how much interest is this? And if there's a new trial, Judge Nathan had several rulings that really favored Ghislaine. A new judge probably maybe wouldn't do that. And then we'd get to hear other things and from other people. If there is a new trial, then are you going to have to give bail and everything? Because it's going to maybe be a new judge that's going to do the trial. And it's just a real mess. So we will see what the judge rules. I mean, the documents, the pleadings are due the 15th. The sentencing's due in June. And of course, there's a lot of work that's done with pre-sentencing kind of things. And Ghislaine has not done any of those, waiting to see whether or not there's going to be a new trial. So even if the judge says, no, I'm going to keep the verdict, I would imagine that the sentencing will get postponed from June to maybe October or something like that. I can't see it happening in June. Because the other thing is that if Ghislaine loses on this, she's going to appeal 100%. So they're not going to have a trial prior to the hearing of that appeal. I mean, a sentencing date prior to that appeal. They're just not. So it is something that pay attention to over the next couple weeks. And that is it for right now. And I will talk to you guys later.